I'm Tim Gombas, and this is Faith Improvised. It's a podcast where I can think out loud and talk with friends about things that interest me. Books, films, sports, music, culture, politics, the wonders and complexities of being Christian in this world, and my academic discipline, biblical studies. You're welcome to email me if you like at faithimprovised@gmail.com. In this episode, I share some observations from the past week, and I recommend a wonderful and absolutely necessary new book on the experiences of LGBTQ people in the church. So this episode is going to be a little bit shorter than normal. Time sort of just got away from me today. So I won't be talking about Romans 11 on this episode of the program. Hopefully we'll return to that next week. But I do have some observations to share, and also a fantastic book to recommend. We got a fresh 6 to 7 inches of snow last night and throughout today. So I was shoveling earlier, and I'm probably going to be returning to shoveling the driveway when I finish this. So the day hasn't quite turned out like I would have imagined. Had a wonderful walk out in the snow early this morning, listening to Radiohead, pondering all that is awful and wonderful about the world. But at any rate, this episode will be a little bit shorter. And that's just kind of how it is. And I feel fine making that call because this week is a very special week for me. This is my birthday week. On Thursday, I turn a very significant number. I turn 50. That is really just a complete numerical fiction, but yet it's also kind of a big deal. And I feel great about that. I feel fine. I don't feel good or bad. It just is what it is. There are some ways in which things are in an odd place for me at 50. But there are also ways in which there's loads of promise and possibility. So is what it is. We're celebrating by spending the weekend in Detroit, which isn't that what everyone wants for their 50th birthday, a weekend in Detroit? We're going to be going to one of my absolute favorite places, the Detroit Institute of Arts, which is, if you've never been, it's one of the most wonderful collections of art in the country. It's a surprise that that's the case, but it's a beautiful facility with amazing collections. And if you've ever stood in sort of the Great Central Hall and seen the Diego Rivera murals, it's a transcendent experience. So I'm looking forward to some good meals, good drinks, good experiences this weekend. And I'm planning to have a blast of a week. I'm celebrating Thursday by going to get a haircut. So this week will bring the wonderful and the mundane. Last weekend, Saturday and Sunday, was such a great weekend of football games with the NFL playoffs. Some amazing games. It was so fun. This is sports is sort of one of the last areas of life where there's where things do not always go according to script. And there's nothing like an athletic competition where the end of the story is not known, the thrill of the unfolding story. And a bunch of the games came down to the last play. So that was fun. I parked it all weekend on the couch, was texting my friends, Steve and Don, throughout the games, which was just so fun, so great. Got myself set up with loads of snacks and got the ottoman out, camped out, enjoyed my weekend. Saw a couple of commercials for the Masters, which is coming up in April, which is so wonderful to contemplate. It seems so far off being stuck under layers of snow, but that's always an absolute high point of the year for me. One of my favorite weeks is Masters week. And like I said, it feels and seems so far off, but you got to have hope. And that's a fun thing to start looking forward to. Came home with some new books this week that I'm digging into. My pile just keeps growing, and I flit about going back and forth to this one and to that one. But I got a book by Parker Palmer. I've not read anything by him. I'm sure that others of you have read some of his work in the past. It's been recommended to me, but I've never really picked it up. But he wrote a book called Let Your Life Speak, which is on vocation. And it was recommended to me just to see if it might spark some inspiration, because I'm in a place where I'm not really sure what exactly comes next. And I'm doing a lot of thinking about that. And it's sort of a weird season of uncertainty, that it's crazy because this is also a season for our family that is marked in many ways by plenty and by loads to celebrate. But there's also some uncertainty, which is just weird. Anyway, I'm reading that book. Hopefully it'll lead to some good insights and some sort of clarity in some way. Maybe that's asking too much. Also picked up Kiese Layman's memoir, Heavy, which a few friends have recommended. And I love reading memoirs. I'm reading back through Dante Stewart's memoir, Shouting in the Fire, because we're reading through that in a group, an adult formation group at the church. And we started that yesterday. I love memoirs. Just hearing people's stories, their struggles, their experiences. It's a way of cultivating empathy, sort of looking at life through another person's eyes and then looking at that person's life and coming to understand that there's far more wonder and richness in the world in the form of other people and their experiences. So I always enjoy those. I want to tell you about a book. It's by Bridget Eileen Rivera, and it's called Heavy Burdens, 7 Ways LGBTQ Christians Experience Harm in the Church, and it's published by Brazos Press. I'm so glad to have come across this wonderful and hopeful book, because there's something that I found to be profoundly problematic about how the Christian church has addressed people who identify as LGBTQ. And that is that the gospel offers immense promise and utterly hopeful possibilities. It expands the imagination, except if you identify as LGBTQ. If that's how you identify, then what we have to talk about is limitation, restriction, prohibitions. There's something seriously wrong about that. And further, as I've mentioned previously, the gospel is not merely a message. It's both a reality and it's speech about that reality. The embodied gospel is a community of profound hospitality for the marginalized, the excluded, the outcasts, and the exploited. And one of the most excluded and marginalized groups of people in contemporary culture is those who identify as LGBTQ. So to my mind, the gospel ought to be the most promising reality for precisely those people. And yet the Christian church has, to a great extent, postured itself as the enemy of such people. And as Rivera narrates, and this is no secret, the Christian church has done great damage to people whose sexuality and gender identity falls outside of what is considered traditional. And the church has fallen back on reinforcements of traditional notions of sexuality and gender, even though Christians going back as far as the Reformation have revised notions of sexuality, even within the bounds of marriage, to an extent that is really stunning to consider. All that is to say, this book arrives as a wonderful gift. In her first 2 chapters, Rivera writes about the sexual revolution initiated by the Protestant Reformation. Sex and sexual desire had been viewed as sinful, even within marriage, and celibacy was seen as the height of virtue. All that changed with the Reformation, as Martin Luther and many other pastors began talking about sex within marriage as a gift to be celebrated and enjoyed. Celibacy came to be viewed as cruel. Sex was not merely for procreation, but it was God's gift for humans to enjoy. And this leads to the first burden that Rivera names. I'm quoting her, "Many straight Christians tell gay people to be celibate forever, even as their own tradition has evolved to eliminate any similar requirement for themselves. Lifelong celibacy is possible, they say, but most don't believe it. Most only say so when they're talking to gay people." Rivera's next chapters are really fascinating as she details the development of notions of homosexuality and heterosexuality in Freudian psychoanalysis, and how the term homosexual came to be used in English translations of the Bible. All of that feeds into the second burden that LGBTQ people bear in the church. Quoting her again, "No matter what queer people do, how they live, how they talk, or how they define their own existence, when many Christians meet an LGBTQ person, they see a pathological sinner, a pervert. All people sin, but LGBTQ people are sinners without grace." Rivera's fifth and sixth chapters narrate the development of LGBTQ people as folk devils. These are people that culture can villainize and blame for perceptions of moral decline. Quoting her, "Folk devils stoke the fires of moral panic. They symbolize the fears of the masses and become a channel for public anxiety, regardless of their actual responsibility for the problems at hand. Sensationalized rhetoric distorts public perception of the maligned folk devil group, collapsing all members into a single type that fuels a moral crusade, however fabricated, for political and social change." Her citations of the statements of pastors and moral crusaders like Jerry Falwell Sr. have functioned in precisely this way. In 1981, Falwell wrote, "The homosexuals are on the march in this country. Please remember, homosexuals do not reproduce, they recruit. And many of them are after my children and your children." All of this is quite ironic when one considers the scandals of sexual abuse in evangelical organizations, churches, and denominations like the Southern Baptist Convention, and that is to say nothing of the scandalous behavior of supposed Christian leaders like Jerry Falwell Jr. Rivera's third burden. When it comes to LGBTQ issues, she writes, "Many Christians are more committed to being enemies than to embodying the truth of the gospel. The cost of defining an entire group of people as the moral enemy is moral blindness." The book's next few chapters deal with the reality that some of the Bible's supposedly clear passages on human sexuality are not as clear-cut as many imagine them to be. For example, Rivera discusses the differences among interpreters, including pastors and church leaders, who allow for differences of opinion when it comes to divorce and remarriage. Though some people have strong convictions on such issues, they allow for differences of opinion in their churches, and opinions have changed and evolved over time. This is Rivera's fourth burden. She writes, "Most heterosexual Christians believe the Bible to be incredibly complex when it comes to questions that they themselves ask about traditional teaching, but when it comes to LGBTQ issues, the Bible is suddenly clear. No questions, no thinking. End of story." In chapters 9 and 10, Rivera examines Christian constructions of gender identity. According to Christian books on masculinity and femininity, men are supposed to be dominant, in charge, taking the initiative. They work outside the home, going out to conquer the world, while women stay home and are submissive and quiet. But such constructions of gender identity don't make space at all for the wide variety of how people are wired. Men and women are slotted into roles that set limits and boundaries for behavior and lifestyles. As I said previously, there's something profoundly wrong when the gospel is bad news for people who don't fit cultural expectations of what men and women are supposed to be like. This is the fifth burden in her book. Real men take charge, good ladies listen, and LGBTQ people fail to measure up. Rivera next deals with gender essentialism, whereby the identity of people is reduced to their biological sex. But a Christian understanding of humanity in the image of God doesn't reduce people to their reproductive organs and should allow for greater mystery when it comes to understanding all that we're created to be. This is Rivera's sixth burden. The Bible says that human beings are made in the image of God, but many Christians ask LGBTQ people to be made in the image of their sex and sex alone. Rivera's next chapters deal with how the utterly high stakes that LGBTQ people face as they seek to navigate their sexuality and gender identities. They're told that if they get it wrong, they face an eternity in hell. How are they supposed to be honest with themselves, seek counsel from family members, friends, and pastors when the stakes are so high? This is the tragedy at the heart of Rivera's book. Each of her chapters begins with the story of an LGBTQ person silently struggling with loads of questions, some of whom chose suicide and others who saw the church as the last place where they could feel safe in asking hard questions and figuring out how to navigate their lives. And this is her final burden. Grace extends to questions about gender and sexuality only, insofar as those questions exist within cisgender heterosexual marriage. This means that any question an LGBTQ person might ask about sexual ethics and gender identity risks their eternal salvation. LGBTQ people must get it right from the start or go to hell. Rivera's final chapters point to a better way. She calls the church to recenter the gospel and to view LGBTQ people as people, humans created in the image of God. She casts a vision of the church as a welcoming community of safe hospitality in which LGBTQ people can be loved and in which they can figure out how they're going to make their way through life. To my mind, the Christian church has a massive need for a conversion of its imagination about what sort of community it's supposed to be and how it's supposed to view people, especially LGBTQ people. A great step in that life-giving direction would be engaging with Rivera's winsome, wonderful, well-written, and hopeful book. I cannot recommend it highly enough. The book is Heavy Burdens, 7 Ways LGBTQ Christians Experience Harm in the Church, and the author is Bridget Eileen Rivera. It's published by Brazos Press. Get it, as ever, from an independent bookstore. Well, that's it for this week. I'm off to shovel the driveway yet again. And after that, I'm going to start leaning into the wonder of my birthday week. It's a beautiful day. Don't let it get away.